ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 here in Chicago. And actually, for the first time in a few weeks, I am actually in Chicago. Boy, what a journey. Thank you for following. It is great to be able to record things one time in Morocco, one time in Jerusalem, and now back in Chicago. It was quite a journey, and I'd like to share it with you tonight. It is actually pretty incredible. Life-changing impact on the Project 613, young professionals, partners in Torah, young professionals from Detroit, really beyond. We're going to do this like a little journal, if that's okay. And last week we got through a good chunk of the trip, and we're going to bring it home, at least the Morocco part of the trip. The Gibraltar part of the trip at the end is amazing. Everyone should go to Gibraltar. It's incredible. Monkeys in the mountain and caves and military caves for World War II and the dolphin tour. It was a lot of fun stuff. And it's an incredible Jewish community with great kosher restaurants. I feel I should be Ministry of Tourism for Gibraltar. There's a thriving, very active, very robust Jewish community there. Highly recommended. But that is about all we're going to do with Gibraltar for the podcast. So I want to go back to Morocco. So Morocco, middle of the week, we ended up continuing our journey to Rabat. Now Rabat is the capital of Morocco, and a fascinating story of the last Jew, because really Morocco is a story of the lost communities or the communities of yesteryear. There used to be at certain points in Morocco a 250,000 Jews, possibly more. As from last week we heard, the time of World War II, 250,000 Jews in Morocco, but now maybe 1,000 left. Some say possibly 2,000 left, but not that many. So we go to Rabat, and there's a Jewish quarter there, as many of these towns had, not only in Morocco, but you go to Europe. There's the shtetl, the Jewish, or at least the quarter of the city, the area where the Jews lived, and we were there. And there's basically a couple of people who run it, mostly for tourism. There's no active Jewish life in Rabat left. We met this man there and his sister, and we lovingly called him the last Jew of Rabat. Very sweet man, elderly man. And he welcomed us. He had an Israel hat on. He was very proud of Israel. And he started singing a song with us. Aveinu shalom aleichem. Felt like we're like in a bar mitzvah. And the whole group just went crazy. We started dancing with him and continued with a few other songs. And it was this incredible feeling of Am Yisrael Chai, the Jewish people will live. The last Jew in Rabat, I will say, to our credit of our group, our young professionals, incredibly special giving group. So I spoke with him afterwards. I thanked him. And he mentioned maybe just very, very quietly, very softly, maybe possibly we could help with some tzedakah, some charity. You know, he was retired. I don't know what his 401k was. And I just mentioned it quietly to a few people. The word got out before we knew it. This man had a lot of money from our group. And I was super proud of our Jewish young professionals that they responded so beautifully to help, quote unquote, this last Jew of Rabat. Now, one of my dear rabbis, Rabbi Beryl Wein, who is a very famous Jewish historian and Talmid Chacham, Torah scholar, was my rabbi at Or Sameach, oh my goodness, many years ago, back to 1997. Is that possible? 1997, 1998, when he first made Aliyah. And he would take us on trips throughout Israel. And he said, boys, the galus is shutting down. What does it mean, the galus? Galus is galut, the exile. The exile is shutting down. It was part of the reason why he made Aliyah. He felt that the future of the Jewish people is in Israel. And it is hard to hard to deny what he was saying. Morocco is one of those quote-unquote lost communities, one of those communities that used to be thriving and robust and is really no longer. So as we were dancing with our last Jew of Rabat, it really filled us with a sense of joy that we could connect to any Jew really on planet Earth, but also this, maybe this is a bittersweet feeling of the community of Rabat is not what it used to be, but we brought it a little bit of life. Okay, so the question is, just a little sidebar here, why exile? You know, the Jewish people have been in exile predominantly for the last 2,000 years. We've, more of our entire Jewish history has been in exile than it's been on our homeland. And philosophically, the question is why? Now, the simple answer is that it's a common theme in the Jewish Bible. You sin, you get a timeout, you're not playing nicely in the sandbox. Okay, so you have to, Johnny, now you have to go out of the sandbox and take a timeout until you're ready to go back in. All right, so now the Jewish people, here we go. You know, you're not behaving nicely in the land of Israel. You got to take a timeout until you're ready to go back in. Well, that timeout has lasted about 2,000 years. But there is a consequence, there is a concept of a consequence that the Jewish people and our behavior was not worthy of living in the land of Israel with our behavior. And that's one reason why we've been in exile. Now, why? The second reason is for us then, when we're outside the sandbox, we appreciate what is in the sandbox. And it's given us an opportunity to long for the land of Israel, to appreciate what it is to have our own homeland. And that would, you know, be another reason. Okay, and the third reason is fascinating. I'm sure there are many more reasons. I'm just providing you three tonight. Is to spread our light to the nations of the world. That, of course, we were exiled because of our inappropriate behavior in the land of Israel. We were exiled because of our sins. We take responsibility. We don't blame the Romans. We don't exonerate them from their behavior. We don't blame them. We take responsibility. No pity parties in the Jewish people. We don't want anyone's reparations. We take responsibility. We stand up and take achrayut, responsibility for our own behavior. And therefore, all that said, what is the divine mystical plan for us being so long off our homeland, away from our homeland? And one of the reasons for that, the third reason we're giving tonight, is to spread our light to the nations of the world. Is that for the world to see what is moral behavior, what is godliness? The Jews just simply need to be there. You know, you can't FaceTime or Zoom people 2,000 years ago or 1,000 years ago or even 500 years ago. The nations of the world needed to learn from us. What does it mean to be a moral people? What does it mean to believe in one God? What does it mean to live an integrated life, that religion is not just on a Sunday or in the place of worship? It's in your everyday dealings with people. And therefore, that is one of the main reasons why the Jewish people have been in exile for the last 2,000 years. Rabbi Hirsch, Rabbi Shimshon Raphael Hirsch of 19th century Germany, who was the ultimate defender of the faith, explaining why we do not need to reform Judaism, but rather reform Jews, live up to the ideals of Judaism. He was the great explainer of Jewish concepts. He said something fascinating. He said, why were there 12 tribes? I'm sure there's many reasons, but one of the reasons why there were 12 tribes is that each of them had different professions. And therefore, as many people around the world would be able to interact with a Jew. There's a Jewish plumber, there's a Jewish electrician, there's a Jewish stockbroker, there's a Jewish seafaring merchant, there's, you name it, And that's something very powerful, that our mission is to be the moral standard bearer of the human race. And therefore, Jews need to be spread out. Okay, that notwithstanding, we continued on to Meknes. Now, Meknes, we saw, unfortunately, the grave of six Jews who were killed in a pogrom in 1953. It reminded us that even as friendly as Morocco classically has been, Jews are still very precarious, not in our own homeland, and even in our homeland now, it's not so simple. But nevertheless, it was a somber reminder that the Jew is precarious in exile. Okay, that was just all in one day. We literally went one day from Casablanca to Rabat to Meknes to Fez. That was a busy day. We ended up, and one of the fun parts of Morocco is the food, the cuisine. Of course, we had all kosher catering there, and they're a thing called tagines. And these are like pottery. It's way that they're cooked, served, incredible, like a pottery with a lid on it. So it like, looks like a cone, almost like a pyramid. If you see the pictures that are posted online, you could see it. But basically, when they bring it hot to the table, and there's this unveiling, and it was a woo. Our group was definitely into that. So Fez actually was an unbelievable city. We started that Thursday morning in the Abendanan Synagogue. Now, there's nothing like going to a synagogue. Again, this place was taken care of by a loyal Muslim who made sure that the place is clean and taken care of. But again, this is not an active synagogue. We saw a tile in the floor. And this Arab woman removed it for us to show, and we just didn't even know what in the world was going on. We look down and we see, what could this tile of removable tile in the synagogue? Why would we need this? Why would they do this? And it turns out you look down and there's a pool of water, and it became clear. This is where the rainwater was gathered in a pipe from the roof all the way down in during the rainy season, when the mikveh needed to be refilled. And it's absolutely incredible. You look at the consistency of the Jewish people throughout millennia. You go to the top of Masada, there's mikvehs, okay, from 2,000 years ago, fighting against the Romans, okay? You go to the southern wall of the Temple Mount, okay? Everyone goes to the western wall, okay? So if you're facing the western wall, take a right down and then a left, and you'll get to the southern wall. And there's mikvahs all over the place. The mikvah, when we were in Israel, Gamla in the north, it's just everywhere you go, you will see a mikvah. It is the consistent pattern of the Jewish people, because that is the Torah law about how we become spiritually pure. And even though we don't have the temple, it is still incredibly relevant for laws of marital purity. And that is a whole subject that possibly we might get to one Monday motivation. Okay, so that was just amazing to see that. And we, of course, we always, wherever we go, we bring life to a synagogue that is no longer used. And we sung and we danced and brought life back to the synagogue, Abendanan Synagogue in Fez. Okay, the next place I want to take you to is the cemetery of Fez. And I don't know if you could say this about a cemetery, but it was beautiful. It was actually stunningly beautiful. We got there, the sun was shining. The graves are white, almost looked like plaster, long and thin. It was beautiful. I had never seen a cemetery with white graves. It was fascinating. And above ground, so you could actually see it. Anyway, we went to, it was actually probably, I would say, the most moving part of the trip was a certain grave of a righteous Jewish woman. And we're going to tell you her story now. Her name was Salika Hatchuel. Now, Hatchuel, I've seen different, I don't know how to say her last name. Hatchuel, this is French. But she's known as either Sal or Salika. And Her story is absolutely fascinating. She was born in Tangiers in 1817. Tangier is the coastal city, but she lived in Fez, which is a few hour bus ride away. So you can imagine what it was without buses. But nevertheless, she grew up in Fez. She was known for her two things. Her incredible kindness. She was a woman of chesed, of kindness, of giving, and gracious to others. And she also had incredible beauty. She was known for her beauty. If you look back in Bereishis and Genesis, it happened several times that the patriarchs were worried about their wives being taken by non-Jews because their wives were so beautiful. Sarah, Rachel, Yosef, who protected his mother, Rachel, from Esau because of her incredible beauty. And this was a real-life situation where she was, and there's a few, you know, variations on the theme, but the basic story is that she was desired by a local ruler of the land, and she rejected him. She said, "I will never convert from Judaism." And he cooked up a story that she had converted to Islam and then converted back to Judaism, which was a crime punishable by death according to Sharia Muslim law. Now, of course, she had never converted to Islam, and she was not about to convert back to Islam in the first place. So it ended up her being put in jail. She was tortured. She was in different versions have her in a lightless, without a total dark, solitary confinement with torture, and she would not recant. She would not admit and convert to Islam. Now the Grand Pasha got involved, and the news got out of this case, and it became a very public, and you know, crime that this Jewish girl had converted Islam and back, and he was charged with figuring out what to do with this and gave her constant options to convert, and she refused him. She refused the main ruler of the land. Versions of the story say that he fell in love with her, or her son, or his son fell in love with her and offered her to be the princess of the land, and again, she refused. She is quoted as having been said, and basically every version has this quote: "Never, never did I leave my faith. I never became a Muslim, and I never ever will. A Jewess I was born, and a Jewess I wish to die." And she didn't bow down. She didn't bow down. Even when the executioner started torturing her, she said, "I cannot betray my God, the God of my ancestors, the God of the universe." And she, at the final moment of execution, she said, "Do not make me linger. Behead me at once, for dying as I do, innocent of any crime, the God of Abraham will avenge my death." So right when the execution began, the execution, she screamed out, "Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad." That is, obviously, our main prayer is Jews, but it's acceptance of God's oneness. And the Jewish community worked very hard to get her body and to bury it. And that is where we were. We went to her burial ground. This Jewish girl at 17 years old. What type of Jewish education did this girl get? What did she know? And this is always the question you see Jews throughout history giving up their lives, you know, and it's a very far, you know, cry from us. And what would we do? You know, I'm trying to get people just to like come for a Shabbat dinner. Okay. And you have people willing to give up their lives. We saw this in Poland during during the Holocaust. We saw this time and again throughout history. What? And the question is, how do we relate to this? The question we need to ask is, what did she know? What was she tapped into that she would not, you know, as in the time the Inquisition kissed the cross, or here in this case, kiss the crescent? What did she know? She knew that being Jewish was the most important thing in existence, that having a personal relationship with God through the Torah is the essence of living. And if I can't have that, then it is not worth living. If we don't know what we would die for, what we would be willing to die for, then perhaps we don't know what we're living for. Okay, and so therefore we can take her inspiration, Salika, and inspire us to continue learning and to continue growing and to tap into what she knew, that there is nothing greater than being Jewish, no greater gift to rejoice in. And that is what this trip was all about, to rejoice in the greatest gift on planet Earth, the gift of being Jewish. God bless. Have a great week. See you right back here next week for another exciting edition of Monday Motivations.